everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digiday podcast. I'm Digiday senior reporter Kaylee Barber, and today I'm speaking with Weekly News Magazine The Week's chief executive Karen O'Connor and Andrea Barbalik, the editor-in-chief of The Week Junior US. The Week Junior, a weekly news magazine aimed at kids 8 through age 14, was originally launched in the UK 5 years ago, and in March it came to the US to reach a new set of young readers. Of course, its launch lined up with the start of the pandemic, but since then, the new arm of the publication has been able to amass over 75,000 subscriptions, which we will get into the root of how they were able to achieve that. But first, welcome Karen and Andrea.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
So I guess it would be helpful to maybe explain The Week Junior. The age range is between 8 and 14, as I mentioned, but it'd be great to kind of get an idea of what the content consists of and what, you know, the readers get each week.
So The Week Junior is 32 pages every week, created in real time. It's on the news. And we cover major news stories every week in an age-appropriate way for this age group, plus other topics we know children are intensely interested in, such as animals and the environment and science and technology, arts and entertainment, sports. And it is our mission to bring the news of the world to children and help them make sense of it. And another huge part of our mission is to help children form opinions about what they read and think critically about what's happening in the world and be able to say what they think and have their voice heard.
As I mentioned, The Week Junior came to the U.S. in March, but that was right at the onset of the pandemic. Can you talk about how that might have impacted the U.S. debut, or did that have to adjust at all when you were first launching?
Well, the launch of a magazine is always intense, but we did have a few additional challenges, as you mentioned. Our first deadline to the printer was March 17th. So that was precisely when the world was shutting down. And we went 100% remote from our office one day before the deadline. And we had some plans for both for our content and for the launch itself that had to be scrapped. We had a very celebratory cover planned, and we came up with a different cover that would directly address the coronavirus 3 days before the launch. And we had to actually tweak our lineup as well as the architecture of the magazine, because certain things that we were planning to cover, such as sports and movies and museum openings and things like that, were no longer happening. And we had a big event planned around the launch, and our UK colleagues were scheduled to come over and be with us for the launch, and they couldn't travel. But we had several things going for us as well. One was that Dennis Publishing, our owner, had invested in some very cutting-edge technology that allowed us to very seamlessly move to a remote working environment. We had a terrific team of people working on this magazine who were just as dedicated as I was to keeping our promise to America's children. We had incredible support from our colleagues in the UK who had, as you mentioned, launched the UK edition of the magazine 4.5 years prior. And we had the children themselves. And what wound up happening is that although we could have never anticipated this, we began going into America's homes at the moment when they really needed us. And we began hearing from children immediately that they love the magazine. You know, their lives were turned upside down and they couldn't go to school in person, and their activities were canceled and they couldn't see their friends. And so The Week Junior, we were able to very quickly create a very deep relationship with them and their parents right away. And they began writing to us immediately saying how much they love the magazine. And that was tremendous motivation for us to keep going. And so it turned out that even though the circumstances for launching were difficult, we were able to make an impact very quickly that wound up helping us with our subscription sales.
if I recall, part of the strategy at launch, or like, I guess the marketing around the Week Junior in the U.S. was to like place copies in schools and try to build up a relationship in that environment. Obviously, many schools closed. So, you know, I guess what did that mean from an engagement standpoint and marketing standpoint? Like, how were you able to reach kids in the U.S. That directly?
Do you want to take that one, Karen?
Yeah, I think it's there were so many things going on at the moment that we launched then that we had to take our marketing strategy and just work out what we could deliver. We've still got a 10-foot yellow postbox, which is sitting in a warehouse. I think it's in Queens, which was for our Junior Voices campaign, which we were going to take nationally around to hear children's voices. So there were lots of things that we didn't get the chance to do. But so we thought, okay, what can we really do well? And we thought we really need to do social media really well. And so social media became a way for us to create our own weather. It became a way for us to understand our audiences. We spent a lot of time working on lookalikes. We expanded into parental guides, developing a parental newsletter strategy. And we just doubled down on digital. We just thought, okay, digital will be the way that we find this audience. And then we trusted in the quality of the product, once it got into children's hands, to help amplification. So we had this sort of twin stream publishing strategy to get to our launch targets by increasing our digital interaction with parents and making sure the interaction with the child was enhanced. So we were getting good connection points, coming up with editorial ideas. There was an editorial campaign called Summer of Reading, which Andrew can talk about, which was something that we developed on the fly to try and find something to give activity to children. And we spent a lot of time thinking about what were the aspects of the brand which would most resonate with US parents, whether it was going to be reading, being together, understanding. And the feedback that we got from social media, and particularly from Facebook, allowed us to calibrate the emotional messages that we delivered in our advertising to help us gain subscriptions.
I think you mentioned the digital strategy that you had around marketing the launch of the Week Junior in the U.S., that was targeted at parents, I imagine. Because I know, like, my younger cousins are on Instagram. They're, you know, in that age range. But I imagine, is most of the strategy around digital aimed at that parent customer?
Yeah, it is. Because you've got a really interesting set of purchase triggers that you go through on this brand. So you have to convince a parent that there's a requirement for their child to read a magazine about news. You've then got to convince them that the news is appropriate. You've then got to convince them that they should give a chance for their child to read a print product, which feels like a radical thing to say in 2020. So you've got all of these moments to go through to convince the gatekeepers, really, to the families. And our experience in the UK and our experience in the US, that we're acutely aware of what happens when a parent agrees to allow a news magazine to come into a child's hands. You know, it's something that Andrea and her team take very seriously, and I'll pass this baton on to Andrea to go through this in some detail. But it's a big deal to help a child understand a wider vision of how the world works and what their place is on it, and some of the decisions that are being made about their future. And so you have to reflect that trust in your relationship with the child and with the parent.
I'm curious, like, in the conversion state of things, when you're actually getting people to buy a subscription, was that mostly coming through the digital marketing that you were doing, or the social media platforms that you were advertising on? Or, I guess, where were you seeing the most conversions coming from, considering the fact that most things were happening digitally in the spring?
So we had a twin stream strategy, which was building subscriptions out of our existing base of the Week. So the Week was the springboard for authority as a news vehicle, and it was also the springboard for getting Week subscribers to donate the magazine to children. So we had a large gifting campaign that took place, and that really gave us the initial building block by which we were able to grow the digital marketing. So as a sort of burst of legitimacy and understanding, the Week was very important to the launch of this title.
And then, Andrea, earlier it was mentioned that there was a like summer reading kind of marketing campaign, was it, that or initiative that kind of went underway. Can you talk about that? And I think Karen mentioned it was kind of built on the fly. Can you talk through like the process of, you know, developing that and then pushing it out this summer?
Sure. It really was developed in response to what we knew was happening with children and schools. So as summer was approaching, you know, children hadn't been in school in person in 2 to 3 months. And they were learning from home, and their parents were worried about a decline in reading over the summer. I mean, that's always a concern every summer, but this summer in particular, parents were concerned. And we had been hearing from them that they were starting to use the magazine as a learning enhancement at home. And that was something that happened very quickly. Parents were suddenly responsible for helping with their children's education. And there was, you know, homeschooling going on in various forms over that period of time. And so we thought, what can we do? What can we do to help parents? What can we do to help kids? And we came up with the concept of Summer of Reading. And it was a very simple concept, which was just to get kids reading and keep them reading over the summer. And so we developed a program where children were invited to read 3 books and tell us what they thought of them. So read and give us your review of the book. And we had an in-book component to this campaign, as well as a digital component on our website and on social media. We came up with the ultimate summer reading list, working with librarians and teachers and book publishers and authors and illustrators to come up with the fantastic reading list that covered all different genres and types of books that we know kids love to read. Specifically targeted for this age group. And we offered that online, and people could download the reading list to get reading ideas. And we were inundated with responses from kids who read the books and told us what they thought of them. So it was this kind of dual combination of get kids to read and to love reading, and also tell us what they think, which is that second critical component of our mission. And it was a very successful campaign for our first time out, and we think this is something that will be continuing.
Awesome. And I do want to get into that like digital and print kind of engagement component in a minute. But before we do that, so when I wrote about the Week Junior coming to the U.S. back in, I think it was February. I believe, Karen, you mentioned that it was going to be an initial run of like 50,000 copies in the U.S., but now your subscriber base is up to 75,000, I believe. Can you talk about the path of growth that you've seen over the past, I guess, 9 months now? And really, what were the points of acceleration in acquiring new subscribers?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of things that really surprised us quite early on. And the first was that we very quickly got to an all-state distribution. So I think within about 3 or 4 issues, we had the Week Junior being read in every state in America. So when we were sitting around and thinking about launch KPIs, we thought this is going to be probably a coastal magazine. So I think one of the most gratifying things was to realize that there was a real national appeal for the title very early on. Mm-hmm. And that sort of gave me sort of great hope that this was a word of mouth magazine. So we began to see amplifications taking place. And a lot of this was sort of pre-COVID, because COVID unfolded quite slowly in America. I mean, it hit New York very fast. And obviously New York had a horrendous time for a couple of months. But for a lot of America, wasn't really affected for that time period, particularly in, you know, places like Colorado and so on, where life just continued. So we sort of saw bursts of movement where you could see early adopters taking place. So we were tracking it through the geography of the states. So we were looking at clusters. And then we were aligning our online advertising to clusters where we could see that there was a readership pattern emerging. So, for example, we saw a strong readership pattern emerging in the Bay Area in San Francisco. And so when you think about it, you say, well, what's the rationale why you might see the Bay Area? And then you go, okay, it's full of people who are likely to be the right age families for us. They're people who work in technology. They're people who understand the value of a rounded sense of the world. They're keen to try new products. They understand innovation. So, and then we saw a very big growth taking place in Maine as well. And so we began to see these little isolated sort of local pockets. Mm-hmm. And that allowed us to do some digital targeting and to think about those areas. So I think one of the most pleasing things about the Week Junior is seeing this sort of patchwork of communities and relationships beginning to sort of spring into life through the states. And I think as a brand, it's going to grow that way because of the level of passion. So we did a reader survey for all of our subscribers, and we sent it out, and it was aimed at the parents. And we took all of the open-ended questions and we put it into a word cloud, and the number one word that came back was love. Now, that's not a word that you normally get from a magazine brand or, frankly, any kind of brand, frankly, when someone, the number one word that is coming back is love. Mm-hmm. So you're achieving something very special when you begin to become that integral part of someone's family. And we could see this with grandparents. It was a wonderful family that wrote to us, and they'd taken a subscription for the family and a subscription for the grandparents so they could get on Zoom on every weekend and they could go through their favourite parts of the magazine together with the grandparents. And those sort of moments are just kind of heartbreaking, it's heart enhancing, isn't it? It's just this lovely thing to see a family brought together by being able to share stuff they've discovered about the world and how they feel about things. And so we just kept seeing all of these instances coming back of people doing that. And so it's a very digitally savvy publishing model, which is enhanced by a very strong product response for the people that receive it. And something that resonates with the children and also with the parents or with the donors.
And I think going off of that, obviously, it was a very intense news cycle this year, and especially in the U.S. with the election and, the protests that were going on earlier. And on top of that, the pandemic. Andrea, how were you writing about that for children? And did you find that you were able to do it in a way that parents and grandparents then kind of, came to the Week Junior because you guys were able to do it in a way that maybe they weren't able to articulate what was going on? Like, I guess, how did the editorial side of things play into the growth of the magazine?
Well, we have not had a slow news week since we started, mm-hmm. that's for sure. From our very first issue, we have had to cover very difficult topics. As you said, we launched with a cover about the coronavirus, and our number one news story inside was about how, what is happening with the coronavirus and how people are coming together to care for each other during this difficult time. Shortly after that, we had the death of George Floyd, which was a very difficult story for us, and the protests that resulted. And then moving on from that, we went into a very divisive mm-hmm. election season. And the coronavirus has been in the background through all of this. It's been an ongoing story for the entire year, but we've had some very, very difficult and sensitive stories that we've had to tackle. And I do think that the way that we have approached them has deepened the trust that parents have in us and the connection that we've been able to make with the children very quickly. And, our mission is to bring the news of the world to children, no matter what the news is. So we approach every story the same way. We're truthful, we're direct, we're straightforward. We respect children's intelligence. We don't talk down to them. We are very careful in our choice of words as well as images, so that we are taking great care to present any topic in a very sensitive manner that will be honest without frightening children. And we infuse everything we do with our core values on the magazine, which are respect and kindness and inclusivity. And there's a real emotional component to what we're doing that I think is resonating with children, with their families. This is a magazine that that we hear from parents that they read it themselves. A huge percentage of the parents of the children who read the magazine read it not only with them, and as Karen mentioned, with the grandparents in some cases, it's a three-generation connection, but they read it on their own. We had a letter from a parent last week who said, "The Week Junior is my number one source of news." And so they're appreciating the approach that we take. And I would have to say that, you know, we take this responsibility of communicating with children in a way that they can understand what's happening. We take it very seriously, and we are very, very careful in our choice of not only what stories to cover, but how we cover them. And we have a team of people who have many years of experience in creating content for families. And we're just absolutely passionate about the incredible responsibility we have to help children understand what's happening in the world and bringing these stories to them in a way that they can understand. Probably the most difficult story that we covered this year was the first article that we ran about George Floyd's death. Mm-hmm. I've covered a lot of difficult stories in my career, but I've never felt such intense pressure to get something right and to make sure that the story that we were telling was helpful to children and help them understand not only what happened to George Floyd, but why the protests were happening and what an incredible moment this was in America and in the world. And I think we worked very hard on all of those stories, and I think we got it right. We heard from a lot of parents who thanked us for the way that we were covering the stories. We even heard from some parents that they were waiting to read what the Week Junior had to say so that they could have conversations mm-hmm. with their children. They were waiting to hear how we approached the subject of George Floyd and the protests. We became the guide for their family discussions. And in that case, I did something extra for the children and the parents. I interviewed a child psychologist to make sure that what we were saying was just right. I wrote an additional article for children in case they were feeling upset by what was happening and gave additional advice to them. And we released our cover and our cover story and our editor's letter early that week, so that before the magazine arrived in homes, parents were seeing how we were approaching it and so that they could be ready for it and prepared, and they could have those conversations mm-hmm. with their children. And so all of these things together, I think, is a big reason why we grew so fast, is because we were not shying away from the difficult topics, and we were telling these stories in a very sensitive and age-appropriate and respectful manner. And that really helped us establish these relationships, close relationships with our subscriber families.
Got it. And I did want to get into the revenue model. I believe that The Week Junior is very heavily subscriptions based in terms of revenue. And actually, I don't think we mentioned yet what the subscription cost is for The Week Junior, if you wouldn't mind saying that.
Yeah, I mean, the revenue model is a subscription revenue model. And at Dennis, we have a firm publishing philosophy that good products find a way to achieve good pricing. And so we were pretty radical in terms of our pricing for The Week Junior. We charged $37.49 for 6 months for the first, I think probably about the first 6 months of the launch, and the price is now $49.99 for 6 months. So it's about $100 a year to read The Week Junior. So that's an expensive commitment compared to most magazines, but we feel that's not a very expensive commitment in any sense for the quality that you're receiving. So, you know, if this is less than the price of a cup of coffee once a week for your child to be given the chance to understand what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. So I think if anything, we're probably cheap. But $100 is the price. That doesn't seem to be any obstacle to our growth at the moment. We've seen very, very strong take-through rates. This is how we judge the effectiveness of the magazine, is how many people go on to pay from a sample. And that's running at about 85%. So that's slightly ahead of what we've seen in the UK. So that means that people are enjoying the product and going through. We've also began to go through our first renewal cycle, and that's been really positive as well. So there's been a number of business hurdles that we've jumped over. I think launching a magazine with a high subscription price is unusual in terms of how most magazines have been launched, because they've been more focused on size of audience, perhaps, and quality of audience. So our publishing philosophy is, you know, if you build a quality magazine, you will build a quality audience, and that will give you a virtuous publishing model. And that is more sustainable in the long run than charging a cheap price and trying to build a mass audience fast.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Were you only making available the 6-month subscription, or is there an annual subscription available?
It's only 6 months. We took a very simple approach towards offers. I think when you're launching, don't try and test too many things. You need to just test stuff which you think is a banker, and then begin to work that way. Before we launched, we did we did research to about 4,000 American families, and price was something we spent quite a lot of time discussing with families about. Isolating the difference between price reaction and value reaction. So quite often you see people making pricing decisions which are based around bias or what they think it should cost. And our belief is that if you can establish value, then it's much easier to charge a price for it. Yeah. So you'll see that in all the marketing with Week Junior is all based around the magic that takes place with children, this idea that reading is a superpower. And I think that's really something that we help to unlock. We believe that all children have this innate ability to read and to be curious and to be interested in the world. And we're very, very conscious of that. And so a lot of our marketing is about creating that value proposition to parents.
That 85% renewal that you mentioned, that was from like a trial run to going for the full subscription, or was that the 6-month renewal period?
That was for the trial run. So the trial run is about 85, and for the 6 months, we are running in the early 90s.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very, very high degree of loyalty.
Yeah, that's really high. That's awesome. How does the price of the US edition compare to the UK, the Week Junior subscription?
I think they're nearly on parity, actually, in terms of the unit. I think the UK is about £100. So I think, I think in the US that would be about $130. So I think we might get up to that kind of pricing in the US in time. When we launched in the UK, we launched at £75. So it would be an equivalent pricing point to about $100 there. So okay. They're following a very similar publishing and pricing strategy.
Got it. And do you do any other type of revenue for the magazine? Like, do you have any advertising either in the magazine or online, or is it like a pure subscription play?
So we have a digital edition, which we're beginning to work through and beginning to come up with ideas for how we might expand the reach of that. And we do have an advertising business on the Week Junior. I think in 21, I think that's really going to be a focus area for us, which is how we can begin to work on some deeper partnerships. In terms of some of the clients, the clients like it. But as you know, in America, it takes quite a long time to get that kind of momentum, particularly in the advertising sphere. So we felt building our circulation base first was the primary thing to focus on.
What are the types of advertisers that you might have worked with in the UK or you're looking to work with in the US? Because it's interesting, like a news publisher might have a different advertiser than maybe something aimed at kids. Like, I'm curious, is it a lot of like children's products, or is it things that maybe like parents might be, the targets for?
It's a little bit of everything. I think we do very well in the UK with the media industry. So with publishers, with book publishers, with the film industry. We also do really well with financial services. So lots of people have got an interest in financial literacy. Lots of people have got interest in charity or CSR programs or partnerships. So we do very well in terms of people with message. You know, if you've got a message, particularly with amplification, where we can take it into the week junior and into the week senior as well. So I think we'll see interesting work with corporates, interesting stuff. I mean, what we really, really have liked in the UK, and I think what we'll try and do in the US, is follow the spirit of partnership. We do best with partnerships, mm-hmm. where we can bring the values of the week junior into a genuine partnership, into something that's really worthwhile to the reader and also to our into our custom, into our advertisers.
And I did want to get into the digital engagement aspect of things. So I guess with the summer reading program that you established, you mentioned that there were some print integrations that you had, like contributions from readers, and then you also had that like digital aspect of things. Can you talk about like what your view is of the digital, the Week Junior platform, and is that an engagement play? Is that a way to get you know, readers really excited about being in the week and the Week Junior and, you know, contributing? Or yeah, what's the kind of engagement side of things there?
Do you want to take that one, Karen?
Yeah, I can kick it off from a commercial perspective, and then I think maybe if you want to talk through the editorial. I think we can't compete with someone like a YouTube in terms of that level of interaction, so we don't seek to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think as a brand, you have to know thyself a bit, and we know what we're really good at doing. We're really good at producing fantastic content that engages children over long periods of time. So there isn't much point in us trying to compete in TikTok or trying to come up with anything within those areas. I don't think that's where our strengths are as a brand. We do work with a company called PopJam, which is a small, moderated social network for the under 12s. And that's a very, very exciting partnership. And we've had great success with that in the UK. I think we've got 140,000 followers, I think, in the UK, where they can trim it with images and ideas and get involved with the big debate. And we're beginning to see that being mirrored in the US as well. So I think as we continue to grow, we're seeing crossover types of content where it's of benefit to the parent and to the child. So particularly in our work that we've been doing with Pinterest, where we launched a channel, there's crossover content on that, which is mostly in the form of recommendation, how-to, arts and crafts, and other areas, to try and find stuff which is useful for that. So I think that's probably it from the commercial side, but I'll just hand over to Andrea for some of the editorial parts.
Yeah, we do engage with children in several ways digitally. One is, as Karen briefly mentioned, we have a big debate in the magazine every week, and that's where we present two sides of a controversial issue, and we ask children to make up their mind and vote and tell us what they think. And we have hundreds of kids going to our website every week to vote in the big debate. We hear from kids that this is one of their favorite parts of the magazine. And then we report on the results in the following week's issue. We have an incredible community going on PopJam, as Karen mentioned. We have about 10,000 children who have joined our community there, and they communicate with us, they communicate with each other. And then when we do special things like summer reading and a program that we have coming up in starting in January, which is called Junior Council, which is will be a council of 12 children who will work with us and with some mentors that we're bringing in to learn about issues in the news and to learn how to form an opinion and speak up about them and ultimately make a difference in the world. We had 1,500 applications for 12 spots. And that's starting up in January, and there will be a digital component to that as well. Then we have our digital communication with parents through our social media mm-hmm. channels. We have a parent community on Facebook, and we're on Pinterest and, you know, of course, Twitter and Instagram as well. And so we're able to enhance the brand in these ways as is appropriate.
Got it. Yeah. Is the Junior Council something that you tested in the UK initially, or is this kind of like a brand new initiative?
No, we're launching it in the US first. This was really an idea that came out of the communication that we were hearing from children who were writing to us about the different things that they were doing in their own communities to make mm-hmm. a difference, and came directly out of our mission to, you know, help children understand what's happening in the world and form opinions about it and speak up and speak out. And we know this is a very informed and engaged and very caring generation of children. They really do care about other people in the world. They're very empathetic, and they have very strong opinions. And so we are putting this together in a formal way and forming a junior council where, you know, the children will have an opportunity to make a difference. And, you know, we also conducted a national survey around the election. We were the only brand to do a national survey of children in this age group to get their opinions about what they think about the election, what issues they care about, what they would do if they were president, what advice they would give the president. And we did this a couple of weeks mm-hmm. before the election. And their opinions came through loud and clear. They really do care. They have very strong opinions about what's happening in the world. They want to be involved. They, you know, they wish they could vote. And so, you know, this is just another way that we are tapping into this generation of children to find out, you know, what's on their minds and make it very clear just how much they do care and how much they do want to be informed about what's happening in the world. They tell us all the time, you know, we want to know what mm-hmm. the adults know. And so that's a way that we're connecting with them.
And I did want to ask, like, how large is the UK subscriber base at this point?
So we are just coming up to 100,000 subscriptions.
Okay.
So we've been the UK's fastest growing magazine for the last couple of years, and we saw a huge growth during the lockdown in the UK. Hmm. So we were at about 75,000 at the beginning of the year, and I think we'll just crest up to 100.
Wow.
At the end of the year. So by UK standards, that's a big title. Mm-hmm. So the Week UK, the senior one, has about 130,000 subscribers by way of comparison.
I guess, like, what are some of the major differences between the US and the UK audiences? You know, are they looking to learn different topics? Or I know that, I guess, current events in each country is going to be different, but yeah, what are some of the major differentiators there?
I think, you know, we did quite a lot of research into this in the setup process about differences between UK and US children, and the differences were not as magnified as one might think they were. Mm. And there were also some quite surprising results. So screen usage in the UK was higher than the US, so they were more likely to spend time with a personal media device. Mm. Traditional television watching was higher in the US than the UK. They both, all children had the same ambition in life, which was to be a YouTuber as the number one ambition. But after that in the UK, it was, I hesitate to use the word, but I will, slightly more lightweight ambitions in life in terms of being a pop star, you know, being a hairdresser. And in the US, it was being a doctor, being an accountant, being an entrepreneur. So the US children were more likely to be... that's a little bit more serious in terms of thinking about their impact on the world. And the UK children were perhaps a little bit more frivolous in terms of thinking about their sides. I think what they really share though, is they just share enthusiasm. I think one of the joys of seeing this magazine is that understanding Generation Alpha is to look into the future and see goodness. Yeah. I think they're a really interesting generation of kind, thoughtful, sharing, aware individuals, and you know that's a universal aspect of this generation that we've seen in the UK and US. They're very keen to understand the future of environment because it's their planet and they want to know what's going to happen to it. They're very keen to be seen to share in resource and time and focus and how they deal with each other. So it's wonderful, really, to work on a brand like this where you get into such close contact with the next generation, because you see how they flourish and how they approach problems and how they think about the world. And it's different to the generations that have gone before.
Last question I have for you guys, because we are coming up right about at the end here. You know, what are some of your 2021 goals for subscription growth, but then also general, you know, business development and getting the Week Junior more established in the US?
Well, I think on subscriptions, I think we will probably look to double our subscriptions next year. I think that would would feel like a reasonable target. I think we'll do some more platform work. We really like doing campaigns, things like Summer of Reading and Junior Councils suit us. So I'm going to ask Andrew to talk a bit more about some of the plans on Junior Council and a possible resurrection of our Junior Voices campaign that we looked at before. But I think we are so customer orientated that we'll get ideas from readers, we'll get involved with them, we'll come up with new ideas for those processes. And I think coronavirus has taught us to be really agile, and I think we'll carry on with that spirit. I feel if we are too regimented in terms of what we decide to do and where we put the focus, then we'll lose some of the energy. Mm-hmm. I think at the moment we've got some real energy on this brand.
Yeah. Did you have any thoughts, Andrea, on that?
Yes. So, you know, 2020 was really about launching the brand and establishing trust with our subscriber families. And in 2021, we're really looking to maintain the superb quality that we've established and that readers and their parents have come to expect. And we are going to continue to be ambitious in our editorial initiatives. And as Karen said, I think being agile is really important, and it served us well in 2020. We didn't know when we launched that we were going to have the Summer of Reading. We didn't know we were going to launch a Junior Council. We didn't know we were going to do a national survey of children's opinions about the election. And one great thing about a weekly is that you have to move very quickly, and you can execute your ideas really quickly as well. We can only do so much advanced planning. It's also about deepening our engagement with our readers and creating additional new experiences for them, and starting with Junior Council in January, and just growing this brand and continuing to make it a part of families around America.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Digiday podcast. Thank you to everyone for listening. And please don't forget to share this episode with someone who you think would enjoy it. You can even rate us and leave a comment on Apple Podcasts if you like. We'll be back next week with another episode.